Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
You are out there and about today already doing all of the good, and I love that. And so thank you for taking us along on your morning drive. Thank you for waking up with us, or thank you for including us in your day. Maybe you're listening to the podcast hours after we broadcast live in the morning, not because you slept in, but because, you know, simply we got up before you did. So wherever you are, whatever you're doing, however you're listening, thank you for taking us along. All right, here are my fast reflections on a few of the headlines of the day. I had a conversation with my sister yesterday. She lives in southern Arizona. And so obviously we talk frequently about what's going on the U.S. southern border. She reminds me that El Paso is a really long way from where she lives, and that that is really where the very heavy traffic is right now in terms of folks pressing on the U.S. southern border. I asked the question about avocados. She had not yet heard that apparently a lot of Americans are concerned there won't be avocados for their toast if the president closes the border. So because I love you, I have done a little avocado research so that you will be the smartest person in the room in the avocado conversation that is surely going to emerge. First of all, avocados are a fruit, not a vegetable. I found that stunning. And although you might have imagined that they originated in Mexico or Central or South America, in fact, avocado trees were first planted in Florida in 1833 and then in California in 1856. And so Florida, California, and Hawaii are mass producers of avocados. I don't think that we need to enter into an avocado panic. I think if we close the southern border, we have bigger issues than avocados. But for people who are apparently now eating on average of 10 pounds of avocados a year, up from just 2 pounds per American in 1970, those of you that are eating 10 pounds of avocados a year, you're probably the ones most concerned. There you go. Other headline news today, on a much, much, much more serious note. Our friend and colleague Tony Evans has asked us, and he's asked very publicly on social media and via an email statement that was released yesterday by the Oak Cliff Bible Fellowship. He has asked us to pray for his wife, Lois. You may know that Lois Evans has battled a very rare form of gallbladder cancer. She has been cancer-free for a while now, but in her last routine scan, Tony now shares, that rare cancer has returned. So Tony has specifically asked us to pray for God to intervene as the family continues to search for an effective treatment that could rid Lois of this cancer once for all. He said, we are going to trust God in the dark for a solution, and we are asking you to fervently pray to that end. So as we approach this day and the headlines of this day and bring the gospel to bear on everything, let us be certainly praying this day for our sister Lois and our brother Tony and their family and other families like them who are facing great uncertainty today in relationship to health diagnoses. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen. When we come back, Ryan Berg is going to be here, and we're going to talk about race, religion, and the future of American evangelicalism. No matter where you live, no matter what kind of church you attend, if you are an evangelical Christian in America today, you know that the outward perception of evangelicals and evangelicalism is at best strained. My guess is you also recognize that the challenge of evangelical churches to grow is now on pace with mainline Christian churches. And so no longer do evangelicals feel like we can point exclusively to theology as the reason for mainline decline. There is something going on in America at the intersection of race, religion, and evangelicalism. And here to help us understand what that might be is Ryan Burge. Ryan is a professor of political science at Eastern Illinois University. He teaches across a variety of areas, including American institutions, public administration, international relations. His research focuses largely on the intersection between religiosity, which is just a fun word to say, and political behavior, especially in the American context. Dr. Burge, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Good morning, Carmen. Glad to speak with you.
So I'm glad to speak with you. I was intrigued by a piece you have posted at ChristianityToday.com. It's entitled Race, Religion, and the Future of American Evangelicalism. And again, friends, if you want to read it, it's at ChristianityToday.com. The author is Dr. Ryan Burge. So you outline in this piece three important trends regarding race and faith that we have to consider if we're going to, and I love this phrase, lead evangelicalism through this era. But before we unpack those three trends, I'd like for us to define some terms for those who are listening.
Sure.
In your view, what is American evangelicalism?
Well, for us, it's an affiliation thing. So for a survey researcher, we basically ask you a question that says, what is your religion? If you say Protestant, then we say, okay, what kind of church you attend? If you say Baptist, we say, okay, is that General Baptist? Is that Free Will Baptist? Is that Southern Baptist? Is that Independent Baptist? Or if you say Methodist, say United Methodist, Free Methodist, and on and on. And we use those churches you say you attend, and then we have a list, basically a master list of churches that we consider evangelical. It's kind of been established by the social science community, and then we kind of sort you into certain boxes. So an evangelical Christian would be like a Southern Baptist, obviously, or a Pentecostal, Assemblies of God, non-denominational churches. Most of those are also classified as evangelical as well. So it's the church that you attend, the tradition that you kind of affiliate yourself with is what we define evangelical as.
Okay, so there's self-identification involved here. And I think that's important for people to understand, because I think we would all recognize that that doesn't always hold true for the individual, right? So the individual, just because they attend a particular church, doesn't mean they are evangelical in the sense of their behavior or their, let's say, sharing of the gospel faith with another individual. And so I think that the reason I wanted you to define it is so that people could understand, you know, what we're talking about when we're using the term in this conversation.
Yeah, whenever we talk about it on social media, I mean, the thing I always get, the comments I always get is, what is an evangelical and how do you define an evangelical? And for us, it's, we have most people who are even, well, not I would say most, but a significant number of people who are evangelical by social science definitions don't know that they're evangelical because it's just not a word that's used in a lot of churches. So, you know, it's sort of, we have to kind of lord over people a little bit when it comes to social science and put people in categories they don't really understand, because we understand tradition and the way that American Christianity is divided. So if you go to a Southern Baptist church, you're an evangelical. I mean, that's the upshot of the whole thing.
There you go. So now I'm going to say to my fellow Southern Baptists, if you go to a Southern Baptist church, you just need to start behaving like an evangelical. There you go. Okay. So, in this era, you describe, leading what we would need to do to lead evangelicalism through this era. Let's talk about this era and what sets this era apart in your mind.
Well, it's, I mean, just the purpose of the article is to basically say that America is getting more and more racially diverse. And, you know, mm-hmm. people can crow about that all they want. They can fight and they can push and they can yell and they can complain about it all they want, but it's not going to change. Demography is destiny. And there's no reason to think that America will not be a more racially diverse nation in 10 years than it is today. And in 50 years, it'll be much more racially diverse today and 50 years than it is today. So between 18 and 35-year-old evangelicals, so the youngest, the millennial generation of evangelicals, 71% of them are white. If you look at millennials in general, not evangelical, they're about 58% white. What that means is that evangelicals are whiter than they should be if they reflected the population groups that they were going after. And if that trend keeps up, then evangelicalism is going to continue to – it's going to have to lose market share. It's going to have to get smaller because it's a zero-sum game. And evangelicals need to become more racially diverse or they're going to become smaller. It's just demography at this point.
So I have a little hope on that front. And my hope on that front is that as America becomes more racially diverse, we actually see the emergence or the strengthening of expressions of the church that are dominated by racial ethnic currently racial ethnic minorities, who will one day indeed be the racial ethnic majorities in this country, and that they're going to actually we're going to see denominations that currently are very, very small, maybe grow dramatically, or we're going to see the emergence of new affiliations or associations of churches and those kinds of things. So, but let's look at specifically at your three trends that you highlight in this piece, and let's walk through them one by one. But you and I got to take a quick break. But let me just tease people with the three trends. Here they are. Evangelicals are not keeping pace with America's racial diversity. African Americans and Hispanics are on the forefront of the rise of quote unquote nothing in particular category of religious affiliation. We've talked about the nuns here on air before. And then third, non-white evangelicals often have higher rates of religious attendance. All right, we're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Ryan Burge about race, religion, and the future of American evangelicalism in just a minute. Oh, my soul, you are not alone. There's a place where fear has to face the God you know. Welcome back. Dr. Ryan Burge and I continue our conversation about his piece posted at ChristianityToday.com, Race, Religion, and the Future of American Evangelicalism. Dr. Burge, why don't you just walk through these three trends? Let's start with evangelicals are not keeping pace with America's racial diversity, which is something you just touched on, but let's amplify that.
Yeah, so the youngest evangelicals, you know, between 18 and 35, the breakdown is about 71% of young evangelicals are white. And then the big disparity is in Hispanic young evangelicals, where only 6.7% of them are Hispanic young evangelicals compared to 14.1% of the young population in general. That's really where the huge gap happens. African Americans, there's actually no statistical difference between evangelicals and not evangelicals. But among Hispanics, it's double. They make up twice as much of the younger population as they do of the young evangelical population. There's a huge gap there. And it's not going to close because we know that the Hispanic population is rising rapidly in America, and that has to do with fertility and immigration. And we know that white fertility, white evangelical fertility even, has really fallen off in the last 20 or 30 years. So this isn't a problem that we can make more kids and rectify it that way. There's a dramatic disparity going on here where evangelicals are not being able to reach out to Hispanic communities, especially among younger Hispanics.
And when we talk about the importance of reaching African-American and Hispanic youth or emerging generations, why is that important? I mean, your next point is that they are on the forefront of the rise of, quote, nothing in particular or the nuns.
Yeah. So there are different kinds of nuns. I mean, we shouldn't put them all in one category. If you really want to think about it, there are atheists and agnostics. They make up between 5 and 6% of the population each, so about 10 to 12% of the population in general. But the nuns, I'm sorry, the nothing in particular category, which is basically the I don't affiliate with anything religiously, is about 20% of Americans. It's the second largest religious group in America after Protestant Christianity. So it's a huge group of people, 20% of people. And if you look at it by age, younger people in America are more likely to identify as nothing in particular than older Americans. And I show in the piece that Hispanic and African-American young people, about a third of each of those groups, are willing to identify as nothing in particular on surveys. And why that's important is because I've done other research that says that nothing in particular is this really interesting group where they are willing to change their affiliation over time. So atheists and agnostics, 95% of the time, they stay an atheist or agnostic 4 years later. So just 1 in 20 change their affiliation over a four-year period of time. Amongst nothing in particulars, 40% change their affiliation over a four-year period of time, with 20% going to become atheist or agnostic, and another 20% coming back into the fold of organized religion. And a lot of those people come back and become Catholics or Protestants. So this nothing in particular category is very volatile, I would say, in terms of movement. And there are people there who are interested in maybe coming back to faith. They just need the nudge to push them back to faith.
Yeah, so this is where, you know, I hope evangelical Christians are paying attention. Regardless of your church affiliation, if in your beating heart you recognize that the Great Commission is Christ's commission to you to go and make disciples, there is an absolutely open door to a huge part of the American populace. And so let me be the one who invites you today to be the kind of Christian that other people not only want to know, but the kind of Christian that of whom other people say, you know what, that person's got something going on where they have a peace that seems to pass understanding. You know, they treat me with dignity. They're living in such a way that reflects kingdom principles that I don't quite understand. You know, open yourself, be the gospel today out there in the world, be that kind of evangelical. So, Dr. Burge, let's talk about point number three, because I do think this is really critical as well. Non-white evangelicals often have higher rates of religious attendance. Why is this trend number three? Because I expected like number three to be something generational or regional, and it's not. It's about church attendance.
Yeah, so I went that direction because I was anticipating a critique, which would be, well, if we bring in these people that aren't the non, you know, people of color, Hispanics, Asian Americans, African Americans, then they're really going to be marginally attached to the church, right? They're going to come once a year at Easter or twice a year, Easter and Christmas. They're not going to be, you know, consistent, committed members of our faith community. So why reach out to them? Because they'll be marginally attached at best. They won't, you know, tithe or give their time to the church. And really, they won't really be a net benefit to us as a predominantly white evangelical church. The data clearly says that's not true, that minority, the people of color, evangelicals, actually attend church at higher rates than white evangelicals too. Only 51% of white evangelicals in America attend church once a week or more than once a week. That's the lowest rate of any racial group that I looked at. For Asian Americans, it was 70%. For African Americans, it's 60%. For Hispanic Americans, it's 66%. So, I mean, if you want to add committed members to your church who will show up once a week or more than once a week, minorities, when they become part of these churches, become committed core members of these churches and will be a true benefit to everyone in the community.
Okay, now let me just tell you that you have just lit the fire of fear in some people. And I'm going to just point out that, unfortunately, sadly, there's a lot of folks who aren't interested in reaching out to people who are then going to become highly committed core members who show up a lot and then, frankly, start rearranging the furniture. And I think this actually gets to the heart issue in your piece that, you know, I think it takes an outsider to point this out. And this is... I recognize among American evangelicals that although there's a lot of talk about desiring to have racially integrated or multi-ethnic or ethnically diverse congregations that actually reflect the reality of the kingdom of heaven here amidst the kingdoms of the earth, this idea that not only are they going to be present, but they're going to be consistently present, they're going to be really good members, they're going to actually be highly committed, suggests also that at some point they're going to start making decisions and they're going to start, you know, I just describe it this way. They're going to start rearranging the furniture. And we have to get to the place where we recognize that's a good thing. You've described it as a good. I believe it is a good and it is fundamentally good. But that is the heart issue, I think, that underlies all of this conversation.
I mean, I think it's a classic case of we can, you know, listen, I grew up Southern Baptist. I'm an American Baptist pastor now. I go to church every week. I preach every Sunday. So I understand these issues from the other side as well. The deadliest thing you can say in a church is we've always done it this way because that doesn't reflect the change that's going to happen in your community. I mean, white evangelical churches sit around and sit on their hands and say, well, we've always done it this way and we'll always do it this way. But if they want their church to decline, that's a great approach. I mean, we have to embrace the change that's happening in American society and understand that our society is becoming less and less white every year. You can fight that. You can be resentful about that. You can vote in a certain way to make sure that doesn't happen, but it's still going to happen. America is going to become less and less white. And what that also means is that American churches are going to become less and less white over time. And here's what else we know. If we want America to be an integrated society where people feel part of a community of believers of all races and all, you know, all backgrounds, the church is a great place to do that because it encourages things like fellowship and discussion and debate and working towards common purpose and becoming part of the community. And church is a great means to get that done. And if we want America to be united and not divided, then the first thing that we should do as a church community is invite people from other racial backgrounds to become part of who we are. That way we see them as people and not just racial groups. And I think that's the way we move forward in terms of tolerance, acceptance, and understanding.
Preach it, brother. Man, that is so good. Thank you so much, not just for this research, but for the heart of the gospel that is obviously pounding in your chest, and for the way you're letting God use you in the world. You guys can connect with Dr. Burge at Ryan Burge, B-U-R-G-E, ryanburge.net. You can check out the piece that we are discussing today at ChristianityToday.com. It's Race, Religion, and the Future of American Evangelicalism. Dr. Burge, thank you for joining us today on Mornings with Carmen.
Thanks, Carmen.
Have you ever read The Pilgrim's Progress? Maybe you have read Little Pilgrim's Progress to your kids. Maybe you have always thought to yourself, wouldn't it be great if somebody turned this into a movie that would be on the big screen that I could take my neighbors to, where God could reach into the hearts of people and touch them with the gospel? Well, for the first time in history, John Bunyan's epic masterpiece, The Pilgrim's Progress, is actually going to hit the big screen. It's a two-day movie event, April 18th and 20th. You get to journey with Christian as he travels from the city of destruction to the celestial city, and you get to experience the friends and foes he meets along the way and the ultimate choice that he makes, you know, to follow the King of Kings. You can check it out at pilgrims.movie, but up next, Steve Cleary from Revelation Media, who made the film, is going to be here to talk about it with me. So next week here on Faith Radio, we're going to be engaged in what we call Spring Share, April 9th to the 12th. It's an opportunity for us to share the inspiring stories of God's work in your lives of Faith Radio listeners. So if you have a chance to join us in the ministry as a financial supporter, that would be great. We will also be celebrating all that God has done and is doing through Faith Radio, and we need you to contribute stories for Share. So you can do that by sharing your stories with me. You can email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com, or you can always call us, 877-933-2484.
Carl Minniger, the famous psychiatrist, wrote a book titled, Whatever Happened to Sin? Good question. This is Jim Garlow. Sin, it's a word we rarely hear in our politically correct culture today. In our avoidance of anything that might smack of criticizing or stepping on someone's rights or someone's toes, we'd rather think in terms of messing up. Or how about making an error? Or we just say, it's just a failure, a shortcoming in my personality. Sure, anything but sin. Pastors aren't even saying it in the pulpits. It just doesn't occur in the language, Christian or not. It comes from the Greek word, harmatia, to miss the bullseye. And Proverbs 20, verse 9 asks the pertinent question, who can say I've kept my heart pure? Who can say I am clean without sin? And when we do say that, let's not call it anything but what it actually is, sin. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
So I'm thrilled to be joined by Steve Cleary from Revelation Media. He's here to share with us about the Pilgrim's Progress movie. Steve, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Good morning, Carmen. Happy to be here.
So I got to see the screener a couple of weeks ago for this film, and I have been anxiously anticipating the opportunity to talk with you. Our family absolutely loved this film. We have read Little Pilgrim's Progress several times, actually, out loud as a family. And so getting to see this unfold on the screen in a way that's engaging, not just to kids, but it's really engaging to adults. I would gush even more if I could, but I absolutely love the film.
No, that's great to hear. Let me ask you, how old are your children?
Well, they're 13 and 15. And so I don't think that you probably, well, I mean, we're going to get to the fact that you didn't even really make this for an American audience, but you probably didn't make it for a teenage audience. And let me tell you, they loved it because they knew the storyline and they knew what was happening, and they have, you know, in their cases, they have actually experienced the releasing of that burden and what Christ has done for them. And it gave us opportunities at many different points along the way to have conversations about, you know, fear and about sometimes bad things do happen to good people. And what does it look like for God to show up in the form of help in surprising ways? It was just, it's just awesome.
Well, it's really, you know, was our goal, and to really capture the allegory that Bunyan put forth over 300 years ago. But it is interesting that you mentioned who is the film made for. It seems as we progress closer and closer, that seems to be the question. And this seems to be the comments that I receive back from people who screen the film. And sometimes the negative comment will be, it was a little scary for my children. And we say, you know, we did not really make the film for young children. And so that question, who, I don't know if that's on your list, but that question is a really good one. Who was the film made for? Was it made for the mission field? Was it made for the American audience? Was it made for teenagers or, you know, young children? Because everybody has a conception of animation. I guess that's from Pixar to Disney. You know, they make an animated films for children. It's something you take your children to see. And we didn't take that approach. So I'm thrilled to hear that your teenage children enjoyed it, because you can imagine that's a tough audience to reach with faith-based films.
Thrilled. In fact, the my lead question comes from them, and that is, when is Christiana's story going to be told? The film concludes with a "shall be continued," and they want to know. So we should probably back up, because there probably are people listening who are saying to themselves, "The Pilgrim's Progress, what is that?" So you and I know that it is a book that was written more than 340 years ago by John Bunyan. Tell us why you chose this particular story to tell at this particular point in time, and that gives you an opportunity to tell who the film is made for.
Okay. You know, we chose this story for really two reasons. One is that we knew it would translate to the mission field. So I'll get to that in a minute. But the other main reason why we wanted to make this film and believe this story was the one that had really been time tested through the ages, is because it is the story of every Christian believer. And when I go to the movies and I watch a faith-based film or any film, I'm inspired by the testimony of somebody else. My wife and I went to see I Can Only Imagine. I love the movie. I will never be a songwriter. My wife would never let me even sing. So there's no way that's going to happen. But the story of The Pilgrim's Progress is my story. And even working through the film, I am continually reminded that this is my journey. And we as a team have actually received encouragement, and we quote lines to each other. You know, we had a mini crisis with our file going to the theater, and something's wrong and it's overdue and I have to change something and I'm stressing out. And one of my team members writes to me, you know, help in some form or another is never far away. So keep the faith. It's a line from the movie, you know, from Help, saving Christian from the swamp of despondency. So this story is a story of everybody. Every believer is on a journey. Every believer will face temptations, will face trials, will need help, will need forgiveness, and will have struggles along the way. And that's really the message that we wanted to share. Some people believe you become a Christian and, you know, you repeat a prayer and then everything becomes perfect, or you just go on and live your life normally. You know, now you're, quote, saved. And we believe that John Bunyan put forth an allegory that states the Christian life is a journey, and it's a journey you must be faithful for until the end. And every Christian has to go through it. We are all on a path, and that path leads to a destination. And even people who don't believe, they're on a path too. And everybody, whether you realize it or not, everyone is going in a direction that will determine, that will have an effect for their eternal destiny. And so that's why I think this story has stood the test of time. I think that's why God has just blessed it in an amazing way. And so for that reason, and then for the reason that it translates to so many different cultures and countries and people, this, I have never been to a country and within a few minutes have not been able to find somebody who is familiar with the story of The Pilgrim's Progress. we don't even have time to go into the stories of the amazing miracles and testimonies that have happened, and even people that have risked their lives for this book. There are families in China right now that are in prison, and part of their arrest documents stated that they were caught with an evil cult book, and that evil cult book was The Pilgrim's Progress in Chinese.
Well, and that's actually we loved that. That was the way that the that your film opened, was that there was this, right? There was this book that you weren't allowed to have, and that really provoked all kinds of conversations in our family as well. Hey, Steve, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to continue my conversation with Steve Cleary. His background is with Voices of the Martyrs and or Voice of the Martyrs, and you and I are familiar with. The Worm Brands, we're familiar with Tortured for Christ. These are things that we've been paying attention to on Mornings with Carmen. Steve has a ministry called Revelation Media. You should check it out at revelationmedia.com. We're talking today about the Pilgrim's Progress movie, which you should also check out at pilgrims.movie. We'll be right back. In the eye of the storm. Okay, Steve, so let's jump back in. And first of all, let's tell people that the film is going to be a two-night event, and it's going to be April 18th and 20th, and they can go and get their tickets now. I've been encouraging people to actually go and put their zip code into the website and find out a theater near them. It is going to be Easter weekend, so some of us are going to be out of town, but you can plug in the zip code of where you are going to be Easter weekend. And you can go ahead and get your tickets for this two-night event. Trust me when I tell you, this is something you don't want to miss. Pilgrims.movie. Steve, tell us, let's pick up where we left off. Tell us one of the stories of transformation. Like, what is the power of this story on the mission field?
I was about a year ago, I had gone to a small house meeting, and there was a man who was a pastor in Kenya. And they were talking about their church planting and the success of what they were doing. And I went to another house meeting, and I didn't know the same man was going to be there. So I went to him again, and I'm like, you know, I'm just going to talk to him and share with him. And so I went up to this pastor, and I said, you heard the story of the Pilgrim's Progress? And he looked at me, and he said, of course. He said, it was actually the first Christian movie I became when I became a believer, when I gave my life to Christ. This man was formerly a Muslim. And I'm like, that's great. You know, and I'm thinking there's some old live action movies that were made, and somehow he came across one. And he said that that is what gave me the courage to do what I do today. So what this man does is he goes into the most extremist Muslim areas where they kill Christians worse than ISIS ever did. And he goes in and preaches the gospel and plants churches. And I'm thinking, this guy, every time he goes to these villages, he does not know if he's going to come back, you know, if he's going to die there. Because for this group, it's an honor to kill a Christian. So when you arrive, they're debating whether they're going to kill you or not, or they're going to listen to you and they're going to respect you. And this man goes, the Islamic extremist groups are called Rafalani, and he goes and he witnesses to them. I never met a man who's a missionary to the Fulani. Can you imagine saying, I'm a missionary to ISIS? Just the danger in that. And God is blessing his work, and God is protecting him. And he said that he received his strength and courage from watching The Pilgrim's Progress. And I said, well, I said, I'm making a movie, and I'm making a movie for missions. And I said, what if I brought it to Kenya? And he goes, that'd be great. And I said, we could rent a theater, invite the pastors. I'd be happy to share it with them for free. And he looked at me and he goes, you would do that? And I said, of course, this is why we made the movie, for the mission field and for the world. And it's free for mission use. And he said, would you do it in our language, Swahili? And I said, yes, absolutely. And he looked at me and he looked at me in disbelief, you know, like, you're really going to do this? You're kidding, right? And he gives me this hug and he goes, yeah. He goes, brother, he goes, come. And can you imagine that, the joy in my heart to think that these people are heroes of the faith living today? You know, they're not writing books. Nobody knows who they are. I just happened to hear them at a home meeting in Dallas. And we want to give them the tools. There are so many people like them that have put aside earthly jobs, money, pleasures, and they're just giving themselves on the mission field. And they deserve all the tools we can give them. And they're telling us the Pilgrim's Progress in the right language is a tool they can use, and they can use in a powerful way. Just before we got on this call, I was approving the Farsi version of the movie. It's going into Iran. It's going to be viewed by 6 million people in Iran over Easter weekend. And they are so excited. They don't have new content on this TV station. It's very hard for them to license studio content. It's expensive. It's paperwork. And we're like, no, here, take it, take it. So they, in 2 weeks, they had it translated and dubbed in Farsi. And now they're starting to run promotions. And they know they will have it, at least 6 million people watching and being blessed. And they're going to do follow-up. They're going to say, hey, talk to us. Talk to us about what this film means to you. So, yeah, the mission opportunities are literally endless. We can literally meet – we can reach hundreds of millions easily on the mission field because they're already starving for this content. The difficulties of getting an American theater is completely the opposite overseas, where they're just – they're begging for the content.
So let's talk about, you know, it's already been translated into Mandarin, Farsi, and Spanish, but you have a much greater vision. You've got commitments already secured to fund no less than 26 key languages, but there are 100 of the world's top languages and dialects into which you are seeking to have the movie not only translated but then broadcast. Tell people how they can help you make that happen.
We will be taking sponsorships, you know, like the Jesus film did, for people that want to donate to a special language that they feel God has put on their heart to reach that people group. But I would say there's three ways. You know, number one, first pray. This is a huge endeavor. You know, we've hit one milestone. The film is done. So it took us 5 years to get to this point. Now is the time to get it translated as quickly as possible. So please be praying. Number two, if you have mission opportunities, contact us. We will let you freely use the film. Just let us know what you're doing. Share testimonies. This film is for the church. It's for the mission field. So if you have ministry opportunities, that may be a neighbor that speaks a different language. That may be a short-term missions trip your church is taking or a people group you've adopted. But we want to give you the tools so you share with us what you need, and we will try to make that happen. Then if you want to sponsor a language and be part of a specific language, you can go to revelationmedia.com. You can look at the Pilgrim's Progress images and trailer. You can send me a message. I try to answer every message that's sent to me personally as I have time. And we're looking for partners. We're looking for ministry partners. Like you said, we have three languages done. We just signed with Korean, which is exciting because we're going to be in the theaters in Korea this summer. But we're also reaching North Koreans all over the region in Russia, South Korea, Mongolian. And so we're doing a film for the North Koreans as well. And we wanted to bless them, those who have, you know, it's very difficult to get in the country, but we can reach North Koreans outside the country. And there are tens of thousands of them. So just contact us. Let us know what God is putting on your heart. This film is for all of us together. You know, I say, this wasn't my story. This was John Bunyan's story that God gave him in prison. And I guess I don't know if we've talked about that yet, Carmen, that this story was written in prison. And John Bunyan could have left prison at any time if he was willing to sign a document that he would start preaching. And he wasn't willing to sign that document. So he spent 12 years in prison, just like Richard Warmbrand spent 14 years in prison. And this amazing book called The Pilgrim's Progress came out of that prison experience. And we just honored the story, and we added the characters and the colors and the backgrounds, and we wanted to be a blessing for the church.
It is a blessing. And so, friends, I want you to go to pilgrims.movie, check out the trailer, find a theater near you, become an ambassador. Like, that is all stuff you can do right now related to Pilgrim's Movie right here in the United States. It's going to be in a number of theaters across the country through Fathom Events on April 18th and 20th, so don't miss it. And then go to revelationmedia.com. If Steve has inspired you to join them in this effort to take this movie and this message to the rest of the world. Steve Cleary, thank you so much for what you do every day and for blessing us today with this movie, Pilgrim's Progress.
Thank you, Carmen. I appreciate it.
All right, friends, I got to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. I'm Carmen LaBerge. So I'm wondering how you are planning to walk your faith out into the world today. Before you left the house, let me make sure that you put on Jesus, and that Jesus isn't just a put on out there today, but that he really is the covering, not only over your sin, but that he is the one controlling what's going on in your mind. It's his spirit within you that is actually going to engage the culture today. That you're going out there not just, the world actually thinks Christians are full of it. So I want us to be Christians who are full of it in a really positive way, right? I want you to be full of the spirit of the living God. I want you to be truthful and graceful and loveful. I don't think loveful is a word, but I think you get the point. And so what are you full of? It's a good question to ask ourselves as we go out into the world that God so loves as the ambassadors of his kingdom and his kingdom agenda. And also just recognizing that we too are pilgrims, and each one of us is on this straight and narrow path. And so let me encourage you today to not veer to the right nor to the left, but to stay on the path and have a devotion, a single-minded, heart-focused devotion on the Father. Just recognize that the King loves you. And the King sends help in ways that are surprising. And the King can be relied on to always do good, for he is good. Spend some time today in the Word in order that you might be fully equipped for all of the good works that God has prepared in advance for you to do today. And let me hear from you. Thanks for being with us in the first hour. Next up, Bill English here on...
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.